This is Diane Horn, your host on the sustainability segment of Mind Over Matters on KEXP Seattle 90.3 FM and online at kexp.org. Our guests this morning are Bruce Herbert, President, and Larry Doors, Vice President of Newground Social Investment, a company dedicated to socially responsible investing and shareholder advocacy. Bruce and Larry were most recently guests on the sustainability segment in June of 2008 and told us about recent successes of shareholder advocacy in creating positive change in publicly traded corporations. Bruce Herbert and Larry Doors return today to give us an update on progress made since then and to evaluate the accomplishments of shareholder advocacy in this year's 2009 proxy season. Welcome to you both. Welcome back.
Thanks, Diane.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
Would you like to begin by giving a brief overview of the goals of socially responsible investing?
Well, really, the goals of socially responsible investing, or SRI as we call it, are to help people to merge their values with their dollars and to have an impact in the world that's in line with their own larger mission in the world. The bottom line, really, the true bottom line of social investment is transparency and accountability. If we had both of those present in each and every instance, most of the issues that arise really would probably go away.
How widespread is socially responsible investing at present?
Well, it continues to grow. It's perhaps 12% of the overall investment dollars are invested using social screens or involved in shareholder advocacy. So it's about $1 in $8.
And how does the approach of shareholder advocacy contribute to the goals of socially responsible investing?
Well, when you think of social investment, there are three levels. It's often described as a stool with three legs, but these three legs are not equivalent. And in the way that we think of the environmental axiom, reduce, reuse, recycle, the three levels of social investment are screening, community investment, or microcredit lending is often called, and then shareholder engagement. And those form something of a hierarchy where the screening is a point of entry. It's necessary, but it's not sufficient to really reach our larger goals. And the community investment, which is making necessary banking and capital access available to groups of people or populations that traditionally has been excluded from, creates tremendous benefit on the ground. And as well, the shareholder engagement, instead of avoiding an issue, you actually go to company management and seek to dialogue about a win-win outcome that will solve the problem rather than just hope it goes away.
What groups have been involved in shareholder advocacy in the past few years?
Well, it's been fairly steady over the past few years. Public pension funds, who are real long-term investors and therefore are looking for long-term positive outcomes, they propose about 25% of the resolutions out there. Social investors like Newground Social Investment propose almost 25%. And then religious investors, usually coordinated through the Interfaith Center on Corporate Responsibility, propose about 20%. And then there are interest groups, labor groups, and individuals who also participate.
To what extent has shareholder support for shareholder resolutions changed over time?
Well, I think you can look at two or three things. One is that the range of votes has gone up significantly. To put it into context, the Securities and Exchange Commission establishes the rules around shareholder engagement. And given the demographics of voting, where a number of shares, often the majority, is controlled directly or indirectly by management or by founding families, and the simple fact that a lot of people simply don't vote their proxies, they throw it in, hopefully, the recycling bin. So if just 3% of the voting shares vote in favor of a proposal, the SEC recognizes that those are both independent and informed, and that that's a significant number, given the demographics of voting and how many shares automatically sort of align with management. And so we've seen these shares, the votes, going from just 3, 5, 10% on up into the 20s, even into the majority vote range. As well, we've seen a real mainstreaming of the process. A larger number of institutions are being involved and being involved more broadly and deeply, not just one issue or two, perhaps, but more across the board. Huge pension funds, some of the largest in the world, actually look at it as a responsibility to fulfill their fiduciary duty to their beneficiaries. So there's real mainstreaming. I mean, I'll just comment that one part of that we've seen is a large number of mainstream non-social money management firms are recognizing that they all of a sudden have socially concerned clients. They didn't come on board being socially, and they weren't being, you know, told that the firm was a social firm, but their sensibilities have evolved to where now these companies are recognizing that they need to take different actions or else their clients are going to leave. And so we actually formed last year Investor Voice, which is a process that serves directly to mainstream investment managers, allowing them a way to be involved in shareholder engagement. And so that's just getting off the ground. It's very exciting.
Before we go into more detail, what do you consider the highlights of the 2009 proxy season?
Well, I would hopefully not be too immodest to point out that Newground had a pretty good season ourselves, and we had some real accomplishments, for instance, with McDonald's and with Starbucks, and perhaps we'll be able to talk about those in just a couple of minutes. But overall, just again, the rising awareness, rising participation, higher votes, greater corporate responsiveness, all those things are taking place all at once.
How has the financial meltdown affected shareholder advocacy in 2009?
Well, in some respects, there's a significant portion of resolutions and dialogues have been ongoing. But we do think that our own experience has been the company's been more forthcoming and more open on the whole. There are certain laggards and standouts who aren't. But with stock prices being so far down and shareholders disgruntled in general, management seems to be looking for ways to ameliorate and be conciliatory to the shareholders. One of the examples that we had was Starbucks. We had a political disclosure, political transparency resolution slated for the ballot, but the company agreed to adopt a full-blown set of policies and have them in place by the next shareholder meeting, so we withdrew the resolution. We went to the annual meeting because we believe it's very important to challenge companies and encourage better behavior when that's the case. We also believe it's equally important to congratulate companies when they are taking the right steps. So I went to the annual meeting, and I was looking for the person who had been our lead negotiator on the Starbucks team, and she wasn't there. But nevertheless, I stood and celebrated the company for its steps, and her in particular for the intelligence and grace with which she led the negotiation. And the next day, I got an email from her apologizing her child had been ill, so she hadn't been there. But she thanked me for what I had said at the annual meeting and said that when she came in to her office that day, she received a standing ovation from her entire team. And so that sort of says something about the way companies are starting to, I think, have a different perception about how beneficial this is, both in terms of internal morale as well as external performance.
In the 2009 proxy season, to what extent has shareholder advocacy led to corporations making efforts to lessen their environmental impact?
Here's an example with the McDonald's Corporation, which, of course, is enormous. And we were part of a group that was coordinated by the Investor Environmental Health Network. And we worked with AFL-CIO and the Bard College Endowment in this negotiation with McDonald's. We went to them and asked them about pesticide use in their potato supply chain. And let's not forget that McDonald's is the largest purchaser of potatoes in the United States and perhaps the world. So when we asked them, what do you know about pesticide use in your potato supply chain? They very frankly told us, we don't know. That's the job of our suppliers. And we responded as long-term investors and said, look, when we're talking about food safety issues in the same breath as the name McDonald's, this is a shareholder value issue. You know, this is an issue of concern. You cannot simply devolve that responsibility to your suppliers. And to their credit, they fairly quickly, and again, you're thinking of a many billion-dollar company, they fairly quickly agreed that we were correct and that they did need to take responsibility for understanding what was going on with pesticide use in the supply chain, also to survey best practices throughout the world for potato production and to disseminate that information down through their supply chain. So it was a two-month or so negotiation with them, and it was a bringing together of concerned investors. You know, and again, we're long-term shareholders, and so we always want to apply the long-term vision to any of these questions, and real scientists who understand better than we do. You know, frankly, we're not PhD chemists, but we had PhD chemists involved through the Investor Environmental Health Network. So, you know, that was a real success. It's something that is going to have ongoing effects, and it's really opened the door for us to continue dialogue with McDonald's on other issues. And again, when McDonald's makes a decision, it affects the whole industry, because when suppliers respond to requirements from McDonald's, then they end up utilizing those similar requirements throughout their production for all sorts of other customers.
Mm-hmm. It really was big news. I mean, there were more than 80 articles published in the domestic and international press. We even got a phone call from China, a reporter asking how you spell Newground in Chinese. We weren't able to help very much in that regard. But I do want to, again, celebrate McDonald's, not just for the ultimate action, but for that openness to inquiry. When we asked what is happening, how much pesticides are being used, they frankly said, we don't know. And that might also harken back to what's different this year in terms of the economic climate, because companies very often adopt an attitude that we know our business more than anyone else. In a certain respect, you want them to know their business better than anybody else, but you also want that openness and that humility to kind of be open and aware of new ideas that might be coming down the pike. And McDonald's certainly evidenced that in this case.
I'm Diane Horn, and we are speaking with Bruce Herbert, President, and Larry Doors, Vice President of Newground Social Investment. Our topic is shareholder advocacy and progress made toward creating positive change in publicly traded corporations during the 2009 proxy season. And you are tuned to the sustainability segment of Mind Over Matters on KEXP 90.3 FM and on the web at kexp.org. What types of climate change shareholder resolutions were put forward this year?
Well, there were really quite a number. You know, it's a bit of a moving target because people continue to file them as we go along. But at least 75 resolutions are out there. And these really vary. It depends on where the company is. So sometimes the resolution is simply asking for a sustainability report that includes greenhouse gas emission figures. Because if you're not measuring it, you know, then you can't manage it. So then others are really talking about creating targets for the company around greenhouse gas emissions over time. You know, where does the company want to go with this? You know, it's obvious. We know that things are going on Capitol Hill in Washington, D.C. There's a movement toward some sort of regulation, whether it'll be cap and trade, whether it'll be carbon tax. You know, we really don't know yet. But it is going to affect business. And so these are, you know, very strong business-oriented resolutions that have a powerful environmental impact.
And how have companies generally responded to these resolutions this year?
I think it's consistent with how they're responding across the board. There's greater receptivity. There are higher votes. You know, ConocoPhillips, the resolution there garnered more than 30% of the shareholder vote. That's a pretty big vote at a big oil company. So foresighted management is really taking this to heart and responding to it so that many of these resolutions are being withdrawn. And I think, again, it's always important to make that point that getting to a vote at the annual meeting is not our goal. Our goal is really to influence the actions of the companies in a positive way. And that really tends to be best represented when the resolution is withdrawn because the company has made the sort of moves that investors feel are necessary.
It's really kind of interesting that the companies that you hear most about are the ones where something goes to a vote and there's an action at the annual meeting and so forth and so on. And we actually consider those typically to be our least successful outcomes. You know, the outcomes that are like McDonald's or like Starbucks and others where the company sees the intelligence of what we're talking about. They see the win-win aspect, both for environment and society and the bottom line, and they move forward in a positive way. Those we consider to be much more salutary, and yet those aren't the ones that you typically read about, unless, of course, it's McDonald's, and then it gets a lot of press.
What progress has been made in regard to corporate governance during the 2009 proxy season?
Well, in particular, you know, there's a lot of work being done around political accountability. And this really is going to corporations and saying, when you spend shareholder dollars for political purposes, you have an obligation to explain, to be transparent to shareholders as to why that money was spent, you know, what was the business purpose of it, and who signed off on it. And so this year there were 61 of those proposals, and again, coordinated through the Center for Political Accountability in Washington, D.C., their website, politicalaccountability.net. And this has been a very successful campaign. We filed several of those resolutions, and now 40 of the largest 100 U.S. corporations have adopted this level of disclosure. So it's a process. It continues. But there's, I think, more openness to respond to these actions. And actually, some of the companies receiving TARP money were required to disclose any kind of lobbying that they did. So obviously, we want everybody to do that. And we feel as though, in the big picture, corporate involvement in the political process is rather detrimental. And the political process really should be reserved for citizens. But the step in that direction is to be as transparent as possible. It's the old quote, sunshine is the best disinfectant.
Mm-hmm. And it's really true. One of the things I like about the political disclosure ones in particular is that it doesn't say do it or don't do it. It simply says it's shareholder money. So disclose to shareholders how the money is being spent, what the business rationale is for that expenditure. And in that way, it really crosses the divide of liberal, conservative, blue, red, where people say, yeah, that makes sense. That makes a lot of sense.
How have say-on-pay resolutions been received by shareholders this season?
Well, say-on-pay resolutions have done very well. And again, you know, there were some of these cases where in the previous year, executives had made tens of millions of dollars, and then in 2008, those companies went bankrupt. That's absurd. And so there was a lot of anger among investors over that. So say-on-pay resolutions have been approved, have gotten more than 50% of the shareholder vote at least 15 companies this year, including Pfizer, Apple Computer, Prudential, the insurance company, and a number of other companies are getting out in front on it and are adopting this standard. And again, all the TARP bailout fund recipients have had to adopt this. And Congress is now moving a little bit on it. There are a number of bills that are sort of competing right now. One of them is co-sponsored by our own Senator Maria Cantwell.
What progress has been made by shareholder advocates in the area of human rights during the 2009 proxy season?
Well, this is, again, one that Newground was involved with. We were co-filers on a resolution at Chevron. And Chevron, I'll say up front, Chevron is to human rights what Exxon is to climate change. They are a very bad actor. And so when people see the advertisements on TV, it's the biggest greenwashing program going on in the United States right now. That's Chevron. So the resolution that we proposed was simply asking them about country selection criteria, because Chevron is running into human rights problems in Burma, where they're in direct partnership with the military regime there. In Ecuador, there was the 60 Minutes piece where they bought Texaco, and Texaco had fouled vast areas of Ecuador. In Nigeria, where the people in the area in the Niger Delta, where all this oil and gas is coming from, are living in abject poverty and without electricity and things like that. So it was simply asking the company to be more transparent as to how they make, what criteria they use to make decisions whether to engage in business in certain countries or not. And that got 25% of the vote after last year getting 10%. So it was a very big rise, and I think that we have the opportunity to continue to put the pressure on that company. The IMF also came out just a few weeks ago. Well, it's a private report, but it was quoted in the Financial Times as saying that the Burmese generals don't even put the money that comes from Chevron into the national budget. It goes into their own pockets. So essentially, they're exporting natural gas, as a big consortium, exporting natural gas from Burma to Thailand. The money, the revenues from it, are shared between Chevron, Total of France, PTT of Thailand, and the general's pockets. And the people of Burma get nothing from it. So this is one of these issues where there's really no justifying it if we get to the facts. And that's where the company is really avoiding the facts. And I'll just say one other thing about Chevron. They are out there publicly right now saying that Amnesty International, and I participate in Amnesty's Business and Human Rights National Committee, that Amnesty is acting as a puppet on a string for the plaintiff attorneys in that Ecuador lawsuit. And it's a multi-billion-dollar lawsuit. That is absolutely false. I can tell you that because I've participated in this for 7 years, and we've had nothing to do with the plaintiff attorneys. So Chevron is fundamentally dishonest, and it gets back to what Bruce was talking about at the beginning, where if we have transparency and accountability, if we had the truth on these situations, the people wouldn't be suffering the way they are.
You are listening to the sustainability segment of Mind Over Matters on KEXP Seattle 90.3 FM and on the web at kexp.org. I'm Diane Horn, and my guests are Bruce Herbert, President, and Larry Doors, Vice President of Newground Social Investment. Our topic is shareholder advocacy and progress made toward creating positive change in publicly traded corporations during the 2009 proxy season. Well, you've been alluding to this, but which companies have been leaders in making positive changes in 2009?
Well, I think, you know, generally across the board, we're seeing a lot of activity, a lot of movement, a lot of willingness among executive teams, you know, whether we're talking about Apple or Nike or Starbucks or McDonald's. There are definitely companies that are approaching issues with an open mind. And I think that's maybe the most important thing.
And as a category, you can probably look at the political disclosure ones, because now more than 40 of the S&P 100 companies have actually adopted political disclosure transparency policies. And so as a group on an issue, that is quite significant.
You spoke earlier about Chevron, but which other companies have been the most striking laggards in 2009?
Well, you know, Boeing, since they left Seattle, just hasn't held up as well. But we've been in dialogue with them for several years, asking them to adopt straightforward policies around disclosure of political contributions, and they have just steadfastly resisted. And at one point, the corporate secretary, assistant corporate secretary, actually had the candor to sort of say, we just don't have the stomach for it. But they should. I mean, they're in the paper, you know, repeatedly for if there's a company that is linked up with political machinations, that one is it. And it has had serious impacts in terms of contracts being awarded or withheld. They've been barred from bidding for periods of time on government contracts and a whole array of things like that. Now, an organization that represents companies is the U.S. Chamber of Commerce, and they are worthy of particular call out because that is the way that companies now launder money into the political process. They make a donation to the U.S. Chamber of Commerce, and then the U.S. Chamber of Commerce takes out so-called position ads and the like. We've experienced that right here in this state in our own attorney general race. And then no one knows where that money came from, so it's secret money being spent and having a serious impact in our political effects and on elected officials.
Yeah, and one aspect of the Chamber of Commerce has been lobbying against any kind of regulation on greenhouse gases. And that's in direct contradiction to a number of U.S. Chamber of Commerce members, General Electric, General Motors, Ford, Shell, ConocoPhillips, DuPont, Johnson & Johnson, different companies that have already come out and said, we need regulation of greenhouse gases. And so those companies have actually found themselves on both sides of the issue, essentially spending money on both sides of the issue. And so when that was called out in Slate magazine, then some of those companies, in particular Nike and Johnson said, look, they said publicly, Chamber of Commerce, you're not representing our views. And I think this is really important because what happens is these trade associations take out very extreme positions that no individual company would want to be seen taking, you know? And so it ends up creating a situation where advocacy is taking place for very extreme anti-regulation positions. And I think we've seen what we get when we adopt those extreme anti-regulation positions, and that's this economic crisis we're suffering.
Well, you alluded to this earlier, but could you underscore the types of shareholder advocacy approaches that seem to be the most effective?
Well, there's no doubt that when there is a broad base, not only of shareholders, but of other concerned citizens and organizations, when we have like the Center for Political Accountability, the Investor Environmental Health Network, and Investor Network on Climate Risk, where you bring together, you know, the top-notch science with the shareholder voice, and then grassroots on-the-ground activism, those seem to be very, very effective. In fact, there are a number of organizations now, nonprofit organizations, that say they will not embark on a grassroots campaign unless it has a shareholder component.
What do you consider the greatest successes of shareholder advocacy during the 2009 proxy season?
Well, with great modesty, we might say McDonald's. Certainly got a lot of press. And it also sets a stage, because if McDonald's, as Larry alluded earlier, if McDonald's just even makes a mention of being interested in integrated pest management and pesticide reduction, all of their suppliers and any supplier who wants ever to be considered by McDonald's is going to go and try to put all that into effect. And then once we get this solidly in place with the potato supply chain in the United States, then it's going to be North America, then it's going to be the world, then it's going to be from potatoes into their other agricultural products, and then every other company is going to have to play catch-up because of the bragging rights McDonald's will have in terms of the greater health benefits of their food, and on and on and on. It's more than a ripple effect. It's a big boulders falling into the pond.
What have been the biggest challenges this year for shareholder advocacy?
You know, I think we're really needing some SEC reform, the Securities and Exchange Commission, and there are a number of rules that are quite ridiculous. You know, one of the things that as long-term shareholders we wonder about are long-term risks of persistent environmental toxins or greenhouse gas output and that sort of thing. We're actually not allowed to put a resolution that asks for a risk assessment because the SEC has this rule that they consistently enforce that won't allow that sort of question. So instead, we dance around it and we find creative ways of essentially asking the most important question to us as investors in order to conform with the SEC rules, but also get the issue on the table that we want. So there are a number of issues at the SEC that we need to reform, and I think there's a reasonable hope for success on that over the next couple of years.
What direction is shareholder advocacy likely to take in the 2010 proxy season?
I think that there's going to be a lot more say on pay. Until there's legislation, that's going to be a big issue. I think the persistent environmental toxins, that we're really going to see more opportunities around that. From the shareholder value point of view, these possible long-term liabilities, you know, if we're a long-term investor or a pension fund is a long-term investor, that's a key issue. And then the other thing is this nanotechnology. This is more or less unresearched. And this stuff is ending up in makeup and other things that end up inside the human body. And we don't know what the effects of it are. And so I think that investors, again, are using a little bit of caution and wanting to know before the company goes too far in utilizing nanotechnology, what are the possible outcomes? What are the possible liabilities? And how do we, you know, how do we manage those? So I think those are a couple that are real likely to be big next year.
What resources are available for shareholders who want to be socially responsible in voting their proxies?
Well, this is very exciting. There always have been a certain amount and level of information available, but it's really expanding at quite a dramatic rate. One website that is very worth checking out is proxydemocracy.org, and that's an example where some of the leading SRI institutions post their votes. So you can see how the leading thinkers who have done the research are voting on certain issues that are on the proxies of companies that the individual might own. And the next step, something's being worked out, is not entirely in place yet, is a mechanism whereby you can assign your proxy. You can assign your proxy to, say, the Sierra Club to vote in favor as they do their research and do that.
So, yeah, that's a real opportunity into the future to aggregate, just like anything else. If you want to be effective, you have to organize. And so there are tools coming along that are going to make that more possible.
Well, what's the message you'd like to leave our listeners with?
Well, like the national election, there's hope, and change is on the way. You know, people, individuals can have an effect. Most importantly, they have their effect by marshaling their voice with others. And whether that's by investing in SRI-oriented mutual funds that then not only the analysts but the spokespeople dialogue with companies in the way that we are about their practices, but also the community investment opportunities that are there. Some mutual funds actually have that available. Or you can join Proxy Democracy and ask questions and try to have movement towards this aggregation of voting opportunity. So basically join the community. Join the community and have your voice be heard. That's really quite important and quite possible.
Well, thanks so much for being here.
It's a delight, as always. Thank you.
We have just been speaking with Bruce Herbert, President, and Larry Doors, Vice President of Newground Social Investment. For more information, call Bruce and Larry at area code 206-522-1944. Again, that's 206-522-1944. Or check on the web at www.newground.net. And an additional website of interest is sriadvocacy.org and also proxydemocracy.org. The sustainability segment of Mind Over Matters program you have just heard will be on the streaming archive section of KEXP's website at kexp.org for the next 14 days. In addition, selected sustainability segment interviews are available as podcasts. Go to kexp.org, click on podcasting, and scroll down to Mind Over Matters sustainability segment. I'm Diane Horn. Thanks for listening, and be sure to tune in to the sustainability segment again next week on 90.3 FM. And KEXP.org.